Hello, so happy new year. okay, so we're going to dive right into it this evening with a consecration just to start. So just taking a moment wherever you are, just to relax. You're settling down in your chair or wherever you're stood. And then just keeping the spine straight if you can, reaching the crown up to the ceiling or sky. And beginning just to become aware of the breath, moving in and out of the belly or the chest or the nostrils. Seeing if we can keep our mind there. And then taking that awareness and sending it up and over the crown and down into the heart. And from here, we're going to make our offering of our time together. So whatever words work for you, just internally, just making an offering to share the benefits of our time together, to offer ourselves in service of others, so that whatever we hear, whatever arises for us, is beneficial to all beings. May all beings be happy. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be at peace. Om Shanti, 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 peace, peace, peace. And then we'll just take a deep breath and exhale. Long exhale. So this week, we are starting with the first of our niyamas. So we've been spending the last 5 weeks or so looking at the yamas. That's the first limb of the 8-limb path of yoga, five yamas. And then the second limb is 5 niyamas, and these are observances. And we talked about this before quite a while ago, but I'll just mention it again. So the yamas really deal with our relationship with things in the world, and they're a really great first step for us on a path to awakening or a path of yoga, or spiritual growth, whatever you want to call it, because they ask us to, you know, look at our place in the world, and much of our minds are occupied with this stuff outside of us and our relationship to it, and this me, 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 and what this person does for me or does to me and how I interact with this person. And the yamas really ask us to sort of delve into that and look at that and clear out all the things that we're holding on to with regards to that. And whereas the niyamas then are very inward looking. So I like to think of them as a sort of combined gardening, if you will. So one way I look at it is I look at the yamas as the weeding. So plucking out the things that need to be let go of. So for example, it was, you know, violent thoughts about others, or taking away, you know, sort of worrying about others as a way of sort of stealing from others was one of those, asteya, if you remember that. Looking at all the ways we're being dishonest. And so I sort of imagine each one as a weed, and we're just pulling it out of the soil, doing the weeding. And then the niyamas, I see more as sort of cultivating the soil, preparing the soil, and then beginning to plant seeds. And both are crucial because I sort of came to a realization lately that I spend a lot of my time in my spiritual path, and which I enjoy very much, just focusing on weeding. And just looking at all the things I need to let go of and all the things that are obstacles. And what I realized was that I couldn't understand why I wasn't feeling joy. And everyone around me on the spiritual path, not everyone, but a lot of people were saying, oh, it's just so joyful and I feel so happy and so light. And I couldn't understand it. I thought there must be something wrong with me. Like maybe my path of awakening is just one of deep sadness. And then I read a book. I was sort of, you know, as it happens, I was asking the universe to provide me with an answer to where the hell was this joy. And I came across a book, and it was, and I've mentioned it before, it was a story of the path of a shaman, Alberto Villoldo. And he has this conversation with one of his teachers, and his teacher says, the problem with you, Alberto, is that, you know, that you're a weeder and I'm a planter. And I suddenly started thinking, well, this is very interesting. I do so much weeding, but I'm not really planting. And then I have a wonderful therapist who I sometimes go and see. And she has a very spiritual slant on life, which is why I go and see her. She's great to sort of talk things through and bounce ideas off. And she said to me, well, yeah, you have to cultivate happiness. You can't just expect to clear weeds and happiness just to be there. You have to start planting seeds. And the other thing she mentioned, and that sort of like came to my awareness, was that you know, we're never going to be without the weeds. The weeds are always going to be there, because, you know, even if you're awakened in life, there are going to be things that come up that you need to sort of look at and go, oh, and off that goes. You know, oh, I'm feeling angry, and off that goes. And they don't stay for long. It's very quick weeding, but the weeds are always going to come up. What happens if you focus only on these weeds? You end up just reopening wound after wound after wound, and it's not like a joyful path. So what's beautiful about the yamas and niyamas is that they come together, so that you do this weeding, you get rid of most of the stuff, or, you know, you get rid of some of the stuff through the yamas and the practice of the yamas. You become more aware of what needs to go. And then the niyamas, you're kind of like, let's say, sort of getting the soil fertile and then beginning to plant those seeds for awakening. Like you're really sort of in the home stretch when you're in the niyamas. And of course, there's only the first two limbs of yoga and you've got another six to go. But still, you're really getting, you're starting to come home. So one of the things I like to do just as a ritual, this came to me, was to sort of divide a page into two columns or two parts. And then on one side, I wrote weeds, and I, you know, wrote the things that I wanted to pluck out. And this is something nice to do for the new year, of course. And sort of drew the weed that I thought it might look like, that particular thing, whether that was worry or something more specific, like a fear of a particular thing, and drew these weeds. And then on the next page, I wrote seeds. And then I sort of drew plants that I thought represented things that I wanted to grow in my garden of the soul. So there were things, you know, like joy and gratitude and appreciation of every moment, that kind of thing. And then, you know, coloured those in brightly colours. And it was beautiful to sort of see the two together and see how they come together. There is this weeding going on, but there has to be this planting. So I just wanted to share that with you, because I really feel like the niyamas are a chance for us to sort of get into that. Okay, so how do we cultivate our soil? And the very first one is about precisely doing that, because it is saucha, which means purification. Or purity. So I'm just going to write that in the room. It's S-A-U-C-H-A. And I've seen it without the H as well. What saucha is said to lead to, if you master it, is clarity, which is beautiful. I mean, who doesn't want complete clarity? and that's not just, you know, it's not me just saying that. This is written in the Yoga Sutras, like, couple thousand years ago, that the practice of saucha leads to clarity. Sorry, I'm just going to take a sip of water. Okay, so one of the things that I think we touched on when we were looking at the Bhagavad Gita, and we're going to come back to the Gita, but I don't know if we ever went into it in any depth, is the three gunas. So in yogic philosophy, and certainly laid out in the Bhagavad Gita, everything in the world, and I don't just mean, you know, tangible things. I always mean everything within the crystal ball. So, you know, with God or oneness being outside of that, and then all of manifestation, whether it's, you know, something physical, or whether it's thoughts, or, you know, the subtle vibrations, or whether it's angels or spirits, all of that, or a chakra system, that's still all in the crystal ball. It's all manifestation of some kind. Everything that is in that is comprised, according to yoga, of three qualities, and they are tamas, rajas, and sattva. And tamas is like a heavy, inert energy, and rajas is like a very active, fiery energy, and sattva is a very balanced and what's considered purer energy. And the idea within a yogic path is that you become aware of those three energies within yourself and aim to purify to make yourself more sattvic. And then eventually you even let go of the sattvic, because obviously you're still in the crystal ball if you're a sattvic, and move beyond that. So you begin to realize yourself as just pure oneness. But there is this process of purification that happens. So I'm just going to read a couple of things from the Gita here, just a couple of verses that just sort of hold in mind, and then we're going to let the gunas go, because we'll come back to that at a different point, and they get quite technical and can be a bit strange if you haven't studied yoga or the Gita before, is that, you know, they're not really mentioned in any of our more familiar religions or spiritual traditions. So here we go. So when the light of wisdom shines through all the gates of the body, that is a sign that sattva is dominant. This is chapter 14, which is only about the gunas of the Bhagavad Gita. And it means that every sense would be super sharp and clear. So when you have purified your body and your mind, and we're going to talk about that in a bit, what would happen is you would be someone whose, you know, taste is super sharp. You could taste lots of things. You know, I don't know if you, I'm trying to think what it was, The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, he talks about just having lettuce, and in the end he can just taste the tanginess of the lettuce, because his taste buds have sort of been fasting for a while from spicy foods. So it would be like that, and your smell would be sharp, and nothing is dull or sluggish to you. You're very, very alert all over. And you feel great. That's when you know, says Swami Satchidananda, that you are filled with sattva guna. So occasionally you'll see someone walk up and down the same street 15 times, and you can ask him, did you notice what happened there on the corner? And they'll go, oh, no, I didn't. They're just like oblivious. But if you're a sattvic person, you'd be absolutely aware of every single thing that was happening. Like really, you would be present in every single moment to everything. Your senses would be very heightened. So that's kind of, you know, what the aim would be of the purification. Although I just wanted to mention this. So it's very clear that sattva is not what you're aiming to go beyond sattva, and there are pitfalls about getting attached to this state of being purified. Sloka 6 of chapter 14 says, although the sattva guna is pure, luminous, and without obstructions, still it binds you by giving rise to happiness and knowledge to which the mind readily becomes attached. So, says Swami Satchidananda, you know, sattva is a good fellow. It's better than hanging out with rajas and tamas, for sure. But even good company like sattva will not be conducive to that final experience of awakening. And he says, sattva can become a sort of bondage because it creates an attachment to joy. You think, I always want to be happy. And when you're always in light, you are happy. You don't want to be unhappy. But then you're not free, because you're still sort of, you're still attached to that state. And ultimately you let that go and say, it doesn't matter what happens. And then you move on beyond it. So I just wanted to sort of give you that. As you know, why, what is this, what would purification really look like to a yogi? And it's this sort of quality of sharpness, presence, and clarity. and balance. So yoga, has some super weird purification techniques. Some are very familiar, or might be familiar if you've done yoga before, and those are like asana. So the postures themselves within yoga are purifying. Each one gets a certain chakra spinning, and the faster it spins, the more energy it brings in, and it clears out your energy body, your subtle body, and then ultimately has an effect on your physical body. It's purifying. Pranayama, which is breath work, is also very purifying. I don't if you've ever done yoga, there's a breath called the Kapalabhati breath, and it means skull shining breath. And that's very purifying. So it's just sort of send the air very quickly over the skull and purify the senses. So if you're feeling tired, the Kapalabhati breathing is a breath that you would do because it would quickly purify the sluggishness away from you. So some of them are a little more like, okay, yeah, you know, I'm down with that. I can understand that's purification, fine. And then some start to get a bit weirder. So, for example, I remember when I started with my yoga school, like on the first day, we were given this list of things we had to do to purify the body. And one was scraping the tongue. The other was dipping the finger in salt and rubbing it around the gums and the teeth. And that was the way you were supposed to clean your mouth every morning, not with toothpaste, but with this salt. Neti pot, if you've ever used one of those, it's like a funny little jug with a long tube, and you put salt and warmish water in it, and you stick it up one nostril and sort of tilt your head and try to avoid getting like brain ache sometimes you get, and then the water comes out the other end and it clears your nasal passages. That's another one of these kriyas, they're called, that you can do. And then some start to get really, really weird. So there's Barisara Doughty, and the Doughties, they're called, are pretty odd. So in the Doughty, you drink really warm, salty water and then jump up and down a few times and try and like throw it up to clean out. I think it's like the upper, the stomach, or the upper, I guess it's the stomach. And then there's something called Shankha, which is you drink a load of salty water. Again, it's always salty water. A load of salty water, and you chug a lot of salty water. And then there are some postures you do. After you've chugged it, like a couple of glasses of it, you do these four postures, and then you chug a load more, and you do these four postures. And you keep going on and on and on until in the end, yeah, I've done a couple of them, and I'll talk about that in a minute. and so in the end, you... like your stools really loosen, and you go to the bathroom, and then you keep on going, and you keep on going until your poop is water. And then when you've done that, you force yourself to vomit, and then you go to bed. And the sign of your vomiting is a sign to the body to just stop what it's doing. And you rest, and you're supposed to rest for a couple of hours. And then after a few hours have passed, you get up and you make yourself like really soft rice with ghee or some olive oil or something gentle. And, you know, you just have something very gentle to eat for a couple of days. And that's called Shankha. And that just cleans out all of your intestines. And the yogis say that's far better than having a colonic, which actually can stretch the inside of you and cause some problems. So they just... they do Shankha. So I've just been asked, have I done this? And I can say that some of them I do and love. Like neti pot, I love when I get it right. Sometimes I don't tip my head right and it hurts my brain. But I do like neti pot. And Shankha, I did sort of get about halfway through. And I had, as often happens with a lot of people, such bad nausea and pain that I kind of just sort of I wimped out, but I was with people who were all doing it, and some very good friends of mine do it every, you know, 3 months they'll do Shankha just to have a clear out. And I keep thinking to myself, oh, I'm gonna do it, I'm just gonna, you know, maybe do it at home and brave it up, toughen it up. I'm a bit of a weakling, actually. I've got like third chakra issues, I suppose you'd say, that I can't power through. So maybe I should do like more third chakra postures before I attempt Shankha next time. But certainly done lot purification through just the postures alone and breathing. And I've talked about one of them before where, you know, you bring a lot of energy. I brought a lot of energy into that third chakra, actually, and then was very, very ill, like projectile vomited, and then was extremely ill for about 5 days afterwards. Not that I was bothered by this because I saw it as a purification, but everything smelled like ammonia. Like my hair smelled like ammonia, or everything coming out of my skin felt like smelled like ammonia. It was really interesting. So I'm a big fan of purification, and I'll talk about why. And actually, I'm doing a lot of this stuff at the minute as well, and it's really like interesting and fun. So why would we do this? Why would we put ourselves through all these bizarre purification techniques? And there are ones far away than that, you know, like threading cloth through upper nostril and then down through your, and pulling out your mouth, and threading one through in your stomach and then pulling it out. There's some really, really, really weird ones. And why do it? And the idea is that you're just cleansing the body, and that all our bodies, so we have these subtle bodies, if you cleanse the physical body, you are cleansing the emotional body, the mental body, the bliss body, all the way out as well. Or you could cleanse the mental body, and that would in turn cleanse the physical body. So you can work on it on many levels. Sometimes it's easier to do physically because we can see what we're dealing with. Sometimes what our mental body needs clearing of, our emotional body needs clearing of, sometimes eludes us, or the mind is a bit tricky and doesn't really quite want us to know, so we can't get in touch with it. But the physical body, you know, we just follow these kriyas. It's that simple. We just do them. Lynn is saying she saw a yogi swallow a long cloth that passed through his entire intestinal system and out the other side. Yeah, you saw that. Wow. How long did that take? Because I can't imagine actually watching that in the process of happening. A long time, says Lynn. It took a long time. So, yes, lots of wonderful things you can do. But another one of the reasons, say, you know, sometimes it's a bit easier just to know what we can do with ourselves physically, is that we start to become really intimate with things we ordinarily turn away from, or things we go, ooh, gross, that's yuck. Like you become, when you're doing these processes, you know, you're sweating, obviously, one. So you become very used to your sweat. And then you also, you know, a neti pot, you become very familiar with your own mucus. And then on, you know, the more severe of the purification techniques, you're very familiar with your bile and your fecal matter and what's inside your body. And in the end, you sort of, you know, you stop seeing them as something gross. You just kind of see them as something in your body that, you know, is a way of your body cleansing itself. It's what your body requires to cleanse itself. So it becomes kind of interesting to you, and you start to think a bit differently about it. And then I was thinking, you know, about how, you know, if it wasn't for these impurities, then we wouldn't be able to cleanse ourselves. We wouldn't be able to awaken. And Thich Nhat Hanh has this sort of phrase, and it's no mud, no lotus. And I think about that with this physical purification, and that within that we sort of, we get to sort of see the connection, the sacred connection between mud and lotus, between profane and pure. And you know, Saucher reminds us that this pristine lotus can only grow with the help of the murky muck on the bottom of the lake, and it's really the dirty water through which the lotus makes its journey that washes it clean and allows it to emerge at the surface without a blemish, which is such a beautiful way of then sort of becoming detached a little from your thoughts of the body, I guess, and your thoughts of, you know, what is holy and what is not holy. So becoming, this is what, you know, my Swami says, it, the more you become familiar with your own body and all the gunk within it, the more you sort of just are less bothered about that, and also become less attached to this idea of my body beautiful. It's just a body, you know, you realize what it has to do to keep itself clean, and you realize the body has an intelligence, and it's taking care of itself, and just let it alone, you know, purify it, help it out, and then let it done. I'm just reading what Lynn's saying in the room. But she's done many kriyas and special chants and practices, yeah, to do with the intestines, yeah, and it's it can be very beautiful. And certainly, you know, you don't I guess you do expect us, but I think I thought going in that you would just feel amazing immediately when you do these purification techniques, that you think, oh, I'm going to have this amazing yoga glow. But, you know, they can be brutal. It can be brutal. I'm doing some deep purification at the moment, and you know, my body is sort of, or my ego, I don't know what it is, but there's, you know, it's not so simple. So some days I'm waking up and feeling pretty nauseous at the minute. And I was very, very ill a few weeks ago, after I did a big, big cleansing ritual, which didn't involve physical things, but was more working with my subtle body. I had a big rejection to that. It was very, very interesting. And I just see it all as super interesting, nothing to get attached to or scared of, or just really interesting. And I can talk about that in a minute. So one of the other things, like physically, for the yogis, as a way of purifying the physical body, and then we'll move through the other parts of purification, is the diet. So you can't live on water and salt water alone. So the yogis sort of talk about, like, what would be a tamasic diet, what would be a rajasic diet, what would be a sattvic diet, and what would be like a pure diet. The purest diet you can get. And it's pretty obvious, I think, when it comes to, you know, when you start to think about it, it's if you boil the hell out of all your vegetables and food, then the nutrients go. That would be a very tamasic kind of way of eating. There's no energy in it. If you remember, we've talked about prana before. So sattva, you're really trying to keep a lot of the prana in the food. So the food you're ingesting is sort of pure and has a light in it. So you're looking for, you know, the usual, growing your vegetables in clean soil with organic fertilizers, maybe doing Reiki on them and blessing them as they grow, with spring water, all that stuff that you go to Whole Foods and pay $15 for lettuce for, all that kind of stuff. It's very pure diet. And if you're going to the animals and the yogis, say don't because of ahimsa, but if you're going to eat animals, then you make sure that they had a happy life, that they were pastured and not, didn't have hormones and didn't eat food that wasn't in line with what they'd eat normally, and then, you know, were loved, and so you have this happy energy going into you, because in the end everything's energy, so you're just trying to keep everything going into your body as high vibration or sattvic energy as possible. Just to help you out through other subtle bodies and to help purify the mind too. So interestingly, for me at the moment, I've never really bothered with diet. And I don't know if I've mentioned this before. I may have done. But it's just something I don't really care about. And I eat a lot of really bad foods, like a lot of pizza and stuff. But I have had to start eating very healthily because my partner and I are trying for a baby and had some blood work done and was advised by a nutritionist that the time had come and I have to eat very healthily and I have to eat meat. And I've been a vegetarian for over half of my life. But to me, it wasn't even a big deal. It was simply to help purify my body. I'm actually going to have to do something which seems anti sort of ethical to, or counterintuitive to being to purify my body, which is to start eating meat. And so I'm having stocks and things. I'm going to a butcher where they name the animals that they then slaughter in a very humane way. And then I sit and I bless my food and I thank the animals that I'm eating. And it feels very purifying, actually. And I feel like I have much more energy than I've had in a really long time, and my heat is up. Like, I have always was a cold person, and now I'm not. And what was more interesting for me than anything was that it kind of shifted or purified my mindset on vegetarianism, because I realized that over the years I've been sort of, you know, no, even if you eat ethical meat, you shouldn't eat meat at all. And even though I've allowed, you know, I don't say this to people and they can do whatever the hell they want with their diets, in my heart I've always felt like, no, you know, really, no one should be eating meat. And while I still feel that, and interestingly, as I'm now eating meat, I'm not enjoying it. I don't dislike it, but I'm like, yeah, whatever, I'm doing this to help my body, and to sort of help purify my body, get out some of these bad habits I've had and help my body heal a bit. But I'm not really that bothered about it. But I did realize that one of the things that everyone should do above all is really tune into the body and listen to what their body needs in order to purify. And that was probably one of the biggest lessons I've had in this last sort of 6 weeks of following this unusual diet for me. And expensive. It's expensive to eat good meat. Oh, my God. So that's been a real blessing around that, just sort of, you know, having to understand that you have to listen to your body. So I often think of purification and saucha as also like a deep listening, because when was it? I'd say back in March of last year, I had a sense that something was off in my body, and I had a sense that I should be eating meat, but I had a huge resistance to that, obviously, because it went against my morals and ethics. Of eating meat. So I sort of pushed back on that and decided not to take that route. But actually, my body was saying, you know, that's what you should be doing. So back to that whole kind of my judgment of what was profane and what is pure, obviously lay within this idea that I felt like that was, you were going against, you know, I was, another way of saying is I was holier than the person who ate meat. And obviously I realized that that's not true at all, which is really beautiful to experience that, and also to remind myself that I actually am not eating meat because I don't like the taste. I mean, it's okay, but I'm not, you know, some people go, oh my God, I just really love the smell of bacon. I'm just actually not that person, but for as long as my body needs it, I'm going to listen to my body, which is something that happens when you start purifying, because you begin to hear more what you need instead of listening from elsewhere, this clarity that I talked to you earlier. So other than looking at your diet, reassessing what you're eating, you know, are you having too many grains, are you having too much sugar, and we all really have a sense of what we're doing with our diet, but maybe we just have some resistance. But if you want to sort of embrace that, so you kind of go, okay, bring it on, this is really great stuff, this is all stuff that I need to look at. Let's just give it a go, like a big experiment. So other things you could do if you're looking to purify your physical body, you know, baths, great things to do, baths like bentonite clay, baths for clearing out toxins like metals, heavy metals, and just baking soda in a bath, or Epsom salts or salt, that's a good purifier for your aura. Castor oil packs, if you're into that. And then there are all sorts of lovely energy purification techniques you can do. So at the moment, I'm reading something by Donna Eden. Eden, as in you would expect, you know, Paradise Eden. And found some really, really fun practices to do every morning, you know, for 5 minutes of tapping different lymphs and cleaning your aura by swooshing around your body and moving your arms about in a funny fashion to clean your meridians, and all that kind of thing. And I've noticed that just by doing it every morning, 5 minutes, for a couple of weeks, I just feel better. And I'm fortunate to have experienced my energy body a lot through yoga. So I'm already, I don't need convincing that our energy body needs purifying sometimes, and we have to keep an eye on beyond just our physical body. But there is lots of fun things you can play around with. Okay, drinking lots of water. There will be another one if you're looking for New Year's things to do, or fasting one day a week, just having juices. Tons of fun things you can do that also bring up all your triggers that can help you purify. I'm just reading what Lynn is saying here. Since the body is symbolic, your efforts are symbolic too. It's true, and I'm big into that. But the minute you step towards even just the idea of I want to purify for spiritual reasons, then just start drinking water more, that the rest of your energy body start to purify. The sign is there, and the universe steps towards you, and you start to purify your thoughts and emotions. And that's but before we get to that, the final thing on this physical aspect of purification is obviously your surroundings. So again, New Year's, great time to do that. If you're realizing that, maybe you've got more stuff than you need, just to clean that out. And we've all had that experience, when you've cleaned out your closet and you've just given away your clothes to the needy, or all the excess stuff you have, you manage to shove to someone else, and you just feel like a weight has gone. You feel much lighter. And that's the idea of purification, that you're lightening your load and really sort of making way for yourself to connect more with God or the divine part of you, or to have this clarity to better hear spirit talking to you, or you hear your higher self. So obviously things you can do, yes, like clean your apartments and homes and get rid of all the stuff. Simplify your life, less work perhaps, taking more time for quiet. And we all know how much we need this. And sometimes we just ignore it with the distractions and of the modern world. And on Netflix last night, Bill and I watched The Minimalists, I think it's called. It's not called The Minimalists, it's called Minimalist or Minimalism. And it's a short-ish documentary just about people who've made that step to really minimize some of the things in their life, simplify their lives, and the benefits it's brought them. And then thoughts and emotions. So really, we've talked about this a lot in Aparigraha and some of the other yamas, this idea of like letting go of a lot of the beliefs we have, like my belief about people who ate meat. And maybe judgments about other people, and where we're not, and resentments we're holding on to. So that's another way of purifying these thought patterns, of letting that all go. And I mentioned last time a ritual that you can do for that, or sort of making the notes and putting them in a box and setting fire to them. And another one, another ritual you can do is you just write down the things you want to let go of. And then as you burn them in front of you in a candle, as it sort of snuffs out, you bring the smoke into your body, wherever it wants to come in, not inhaling it through your mouth, but energetically into parts of your body, as if you're letting go of that energy. In your mind, you're letting go of the energy, but then you're also moving it back into you, because as you purify, you get more and more energy. And this is it really surprised me. Like, I haven't jumped out of bed in maybe 3 years. In the last 2 weeks, I noticed I'm jumping out of bed and dancing around my living room. It's really beautiful for me. I'm actually beginning to feel more joy, and that may be because I've started planting seeds rather than just weeding as well. But certainly, I'm certain some of it's coming from just some purification, just simply of my diet and some other small things that I'm doing, just small things in my life. And along with this ritual of sort of letting go of some beliefs or judgments or thoughts that you're having as they come up, there's sort of ingrained in Saucha is this idea of loving your mud. And so when you're thinking about things to let go of, and I'll stick with this idea of letting go of judgments about people who eat meat, it's not like I'm seeing it as something that needs to be burned away from me, that was like marring my soul and needs to be gone. It's more than just noticing this beautiful mud, and then seeing it as something to be cleaned up, to sort of wash my lotus, to clean my lotus. And then it becomes like a real practice of self-love, and loving your mud. I really love this idea of loving your mud. So one of the greatest gifts of Saucha is this purification of the mind and the emotions, as well as the body. And it's like a real big teacher of self-love. And it's sort of, because, you know, while we're doing this, it asks us to look at all the things that we think of as impure. And, you know, things we've judged as not being right on a sacred yogic path, and then realizing that no, it's like it's part of the journey, it's all beautiful and it's coming up, and I'm choosing to let it go. It's more of a choice. And there's this lovely it's a metaphor, I suppose, and I never knew this, maybe you do, but the peacock's tail feathers actually become brighter through digesting poisons, which kind of like blows my mind, that really the peacock is more beautiful because of its poisons, just like the lotus becomes more luminous the deeper the mud from which it springs. So this, there is a sense of Saucha, of us becoming whole, of taking all the parts that may be, if you're into shamanism, you know, it would be like a soul retrieval. So taking the parts of ourselves that we've pushed aside, and bringing them back in and sort of using them for our own awakening, and loving those parts of us, and seeing our poisons as a way of making ourselves more beautiful by moving through them. So Pema Chodron has this lovely practice that you can do, and you make a list of all your poisons, of all the things that you think are clogging you up and, you know, you wish weren't there, that kind of thing. And she says that's where your medicine lies. So whatever you do, she says, don't make them try to go away. And this is in her book, Start Where You Are, which is a great book. And she says, rather examine them, for they hold the clues to your blocks to love and awakening. And at first you might not love your poisons, but over time you begin to welcome back these discarded pieces of yourself, of ourselves, which is such a beautiful way of looking at Saucha, this way of coming whole. And Tara Brach also says in Radical Acceptance, she says, rather than trying to rid ourselves of inherently impure self, we can turn around and embrace this life in all of its realness, broken, messy, intestinal juices, mysterious and vibrantly alive. I think it's like such a beautiful way, not only to start the year, but to start this path of niyamas, and this idea of like purifying, tilling the soil, of looking at, you know, where the soil perhaps needs to come up for some air, perhaps what needs to be turned over, what needs to be let go of as we're preparing for sowing the seeds. So really, really lovely. If there's anything else I was going to say. So above all, with Saucha, it's asking us to come to it naturally, and because we want to purify, and I say not because there are parts of ourselves we wish to push away or get rid of. So it's very much about self-love. And you can really feel the quality in the purification when it's something you're doing because you want to. So, for example, when I was doing Shankha, I really was just feeling like I was doing Shankha because I was at a yoga school and they told us to do it. And I felt like I'd be a bad yogi and I'd, you know, be embarrassed to go into class the next day and say to people, no, I didn't do Shankha. And there was something in that energy that I believe just stopped me doing Shankha, because it was just too much resistance to me at that time. And I haven't done Shankha since. It was many, many years ago. But I think it would be different now, because if I chose to do it, I would be choosing to do it. And I remember when I quit alcohol and cigarettes, and cigarettes in particular, because although I had a problem with alcohol, cigarettes I loved. I never thought I'd give up cigarettes, ever. But I remember just one day, just wanting to. And then slowly that grew, that wanting to. And then one day I just quit. I went from 20 a day to none, and I didn't have any side effects. And I tried to quit in the past and had plenty of side effects and struggled and succeeded and then struggled, gone back. But this particular time, there was no big deal. It was just like I just wanted to do it. And we all know that feeling of like the energy that comes with that. And when that energy comes, it's just so much easier to do. One of the wonderful things about purification is there are so many different things to do, so many different ways to purify that you can have so much fun with it. So whether you're asking angels or spirits or your animal guides or whoever it is to help purify your thoughts, and you have prayers, prayer is a form of purification. Ritual is a form of purification. When we offer a consecration, we're also purifying ourselves of any attachments that would come by whatever we're doing at that particular moment. You're cleansing your chakras, whatever you do, whether you're using crystals or color therapy or postures or mantras, which is all really rich, fun stuff. So you can make purification really, really fun, so you want to do it. I'm having a lot of fun at the minute, just because I'm doing every single thing that I can possibly think of, and I'm just really enjoying it. And as a result, and I talked about I seem to have more energy at the moment, which is wonderful. I mean, that's no small thing for me. I felt pretty sluggish for a long time, and just assumed I was getting older, and that was that. But the clarity that starts to come is it makes it really, really worthwhile. So, and I'm sure many of you have experienced this, and it doesn't matter if you haven't. Obviously, it's neither here nor there. And as Regina talks about a lot, like not getting attached to mystical experiences. But it is nice to be able to hear, and a mystical experience is different to hearing your inner voice or your intuition, obviously. But sometimes that inner voice comes through a fairly mystical experience. Or what seems to be a mystical experience. That's very noticeable for me. Whenever I make some choice to do some form of purification, whether it's to my physical body or I'm cleansing my thoughts or emotions, or I'm sat down journaling perhaps to release some of the thoughts that I'm having or belief systems, or to get to the bottom of them, then I really begin to hear the inner wisdom. That clarity starts to come through very, very quickly. And for me, it sort of turns up in sometimes I see flashes of light, which doesn't mean much to me. When I notice them, I suddenly just go, oh, I'm beginning to purify. That's all the meaning there is for me. I'm going to come back to you in a second, Lynn, because I'm interested in what you just said, and I'll mention it in the room. But also I notice I begin to have dreams which I remember, and those dreams are helpful. So last night I woke up and heard that that one of the things I'm working with at the moment would be helpful for me to go and chant Om Mani Padme Hum, which isn't a chant or a mantra that I do chant, and it's not one I'm particularly familiar with. So I Googled it and had a look what it means, and actually it was perfect for the thing that I'm working through right now. And so those kinds of things start happening, or I begin to become more aware of a bird that's in my garden, or a bird that flies past me, and then I look it up and that symbol actually answers something I'm looking at. So in that kind of way, I begin to have more clarity and begin to hear more easily, listening to my body and understanding a bit more about what it needs rather than using my sort of thoughts, you know, that gut feeling comes in instead. And it's the same with my intuition. It seems to start to like really gain momentum very, very quickly. So when I start to say I want to purify, then I start to hear more things more easily about how to do that, and then that keeps going and going and going. So I really, you know, it's like, I guess you've just tuned in on the radio and you finally found the channel so you can hear it more easily. So I want to get back to Lynn. So she says that she disagrees about not being attached to mystical experiences, and that the ego wants to brush them aside to pretend that they didn't really happen or mean anything. And I say you should focus on them and remember that you are truly holy. Yes, that is, you know, I totally agree. I actually meditate and focus on holy experiences from my life to remind me that I do have a connection. Yeah, and I'm totally with you. Because when you forget, one, it's life is just much more beautiful when you see everything as holy, because everything is holy. We'll talk about that in a minute. But and I'm someone who sounds very similar to you, Lynn, that I'm actually inspired more when I see the magic in life or feel like I'm part of creating that magic. And certainly when I have lucid dreams, and I had an amazing one last night where I suddenly became lucid and I just said, clear all my chakras, and I had this sensation that I was exploding and like a physical sensation that woke me up, and I heard a sound I'd never heard before, and I can't remember what this sound was, and I remember thinking, whoa, that was so fun, that was so great. But I guess what I'm saying is that if you perhaps, you know, if you're early on your spiritual path, those kinds of things can, you can constantly seek them. And if they don't arise, you might think, oh, I'm not purifying, or I'm doing something wrong. And I guess that's what I'm saying of not getting attached to mystical experiences, of just sort of keeping it joyful and light with them, as you say. And what you get from them is that it connects you more to life. So you use your mystical experiences to go deeper. But I know sometimes they can sort of, if you're not having them and you've had them, they can then be a bit of a block. So yeah, I totally agree with you, Lynn. And then the only final thing I was going to mention was that, of course, the whole sort of, you know, catch 22 with Soucher and purification is, of course, this idea that we even need to purify. It's been a long time since I've read a bit of Ram Dass. So I thought I would, he says this very perfectly, and I thought I would just quote him here from his book on the Bhagavad Gita, and he talks about purification within it. And he says, now in a way, purification is a hype. You take your body just as it is, and your mind just as it is, and your feelings just as they are, and right here in this very place lies the Brahman, the enlightened state. It's right here and it's right now. It's not there or then. It's not in India or Tibet. It's not being kept a secret. It's not in this book. It's right here, and you are it right now. So what's the point of purification? What, in fact, is the point of any of these practices if we are already the Brahman? And they are just to get rid of whatever prevents us from really knowing who we are at this moment. And I think that sort of ties into what you're saying, Nina. When you start to purify, you then get in touch with who you really are, and you get in touch with this holiness. And so some of those experiences that come from that are really, really very beautiful. So we're sort of having this sort of interesting paradox. One level of our intellectual understanding, we know we already have the riches, we know we are pure, we know that we are the Buddha and that we are free. But if we look inside, we also know that we don't believe it. And that's what purification is about. It's from getting us from where we seem to think we still are to where we don't think we're anywhere anymore. So it's a bit confusing, but all of them, by one route or another, are just designed to get around that roadblock between our knowing and our believing. I think was all I wanted to say. Oh, that was it. And it's just, and we've talked about her, she has this lovely book, Yamas and Niyamas, before. She talks about Soucher as also being like meaning purity of the moment. So of this understanding that everything is holy and coming to every single moment sort of pure, with like in a very sattvic intention, a very pure intention. So everything we come to, we see as a path to awakening, and we recognize everything in our path as being holy. So sort of even if, you know, our old mind will tell us that it's mud, that we can come to it and see, well, even if it's mud, it's holy mud. Even if it's poop and spit and sweat, it's holiness. It's all holy. So that is such a it's a really lovely one to, as I say, start the new year off and think about as you're sort of preparing intentions for awakening this year, if you are doing that, so including some purification techniques in some way or another. That's it. So I'm just going to play a very short song before I sign off. Wasn't sure what I'm going to do, but I think we'll do this one. So this is a mantra. You know, remember I said mantras are a great way to purify, and this one is, and Kundalini yoga mantras in particular are super purifying. I mean, I guess they're no more purifying than any other, but they feel very purifying to me. And this one is expand through all obstacles. Just a taster of that one, but thank you very much for being here this evening and for chiming in. I really appreciate it, Lynn, as well, for hearing your thoughts on this. So thank you, and namaste, and really blessings for a beautiful 2017. Thanks. See you next Monday.